This is Primal Screen, a weekly radio show airing Monday evenings on Triple R. Primal Screen is about movies, from the ones on the big screen to the ones you stream. Hope you enjoy the podcast version and feel free to get in touch via the Primal Screen Facebook page or the Triple R website.
Welcome to Primal Screen, a show and podcast all about screen culture, from movies on the big screen to whatever you're streaming. We're broadcasting tonight from the Triple R studios on the stolen lands of the Kulin Nation. This is and always will be Aboriginal land. Big thanks to Fee for the last 3 hours of maps. I'm your host, Flick Ford, and I'm joined in the studio tonight by Thomas Caldwell. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, good to be back.
Yes. And a little shout out to Will Cox, who guest hosted last week, had you on the panel, and Law Burns joined for a very special Doctor Who music special.
That, oh my goodness, I was in my element. That was glorious. That was heaven. It was combining radio and Doctor Who.
It was a true delight as well, listening from home. And that has been something that's been in the works for a while, so I'm glad it came through.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. And we're joined by Vaishnavi Vijayakumar. Hello.
Hey, Flick. How are you?
I'm good. So later tonight, we're going to review a feature debut from Aussie writer-director Adrian Chiarella. And in Leviticus, there are two young lovers are tormented by a violent supernatural entity that takes the form of the person you desire the most. And Vaish, you had the pleasure of speaking with Adrian about the story, how the story came about, and kind of the complex intersection of race and faith and desire. And we're going to talk about, we're going to listen to that interview a bit later on tonight. But first, in Steven Spielberg's Disclosure Day, a plucky meteorologist played by Emily Blunt and cybersecurity expert, a rather goofy Josh O'Connor, get entangled in exposing a government cover-up of UFOs and extraterrestrial secrets led by a villainous Colin Firth. Here is a little taste.
Do you understand what she's saying?
I hear her. It's gibberish. I can't understand it.
I feel like people sometimes say that when I'm on radio. Thomas, this feels...
Yes, speaking of people who are speaking gibberish.
This feels very much in the Spielberg sci-fi wheelhouse. You know, obviously the director who brought us Close Encounters of the Third Kind, E.T., Minority Report is kind of like still within that sci-fi space, War of the Worlds, so many different films. I'm not going to go through his entire filmography. Obviously a legend of the screen. Gone back to Aliens for what could be his final film, hopefully not. What did you make of Disclosure Day?
This is my favourite type of Spielberg. He has this very childlike obsession with aliens. And my two favourite Spielberg films of all time are Close Encounters of the Third Kind and E.T. the Extraterrestrial. And I love how he puts aliens as little cameos at the end of AI, artificial intelligence. A lot of people hated that ending. I thought it was wonderful. When the aliens appear in an Indiana Jones film, that was the least of my worries with that film. I was fine with that. I could watch Spielberg with benevolent aliens forever. So I was quite excited to find out this was another one of those films. And while watching it, I was in this kind of state of just kind of bliss. I was so happy to be in the hands of this master filmmaker again, who is so good at bringing a human element to blockbusters. It's funny, when I was growing up and, you know, getting into film, Spielberg was kind of it was a dirty word. It was people criticize. If you're into Spielberg, you were
like basic bitch.
It was basic. It was too mainstream. No, it was. It was regarded as being too mainstream, too popular, it's too commercial, et cetera. And I remember finding it really odd a few years ago when things like The Fablemans and West Side Story were trying to get attention, and there was this kind of attitude that Spielberg was part of this old arty guard who wants to tell stories, and he's not, you know, he's not a Marvel director. He's not a... And this complete reversal of how he was depicted by popular culture. And I think we've just settled. Now that we've seen what truly vacuous blockbusters look like, I think we've realised he is a really good storyteller. Now, okay, I did love being in this film. On reflection, I have a huge number of issues with it, which are kind of annoying because I wanted to love it a lot more. And I still do. I think it's a great film, but there's lots of points in this film where you sort of realise, I bet that character was meant to continue their story and got cut, or they must have rushed the ending, or the special effects budget ran out just when they really needed it.
When and, aliens arrive?
Yeah, and there's a very naive worldview that comes in at the end as well. I've heard several people say this, that it's so hard to swallow the optimistic ending that the film kind of builds to. You know, the faith in humanity in the way they're going to respond to seeing things, to seeing, yes, I mean, hang on, I'm skipping all over the place, but there's an idea that if the news broadcasts the truth, it will change the world, and I don't think anyone's believing that anymore, and if we witness atrocities, it will change our minds, and, I mean, I think that's not, that we all, I think we all know that doesn't happen either. I mean,
especially after the last few years.
Well, you think of all the footage we've seen. I mean, I mean that's the thing. When Spielberg was coming up, the Vietnam War was the big cultural flashpoint. And that was the war where people saw televised images of what was happening and they changed their minds. We see televised images of what's happening in Palestine all the time. And it gets dismissed now as propaganda.
And also we're often not seeing it through these news services as
Or we don't see it. So, look, I'd like to – I've rambled a little bit.
It'd be great
to hear your perspectives, because I've got a lot more to say about this and where it fits in, I think, with Spielberg's world vision and career.
Oh, no, I think that's actually – you've given a lot of things that I think will – of almost foreshadowing for, I'm sure, what will come up in Vaish and my thoughts on this. Vaish, I'd love to hear from you. What did you make of Disclosure Day?
I kind of felt like I was watching three different films in some ways, or three different stories. I think
I think you were.
Yeah. I think I was. And I feel like the nature of sci-fi is there's a lot of jargon, a lot of context to get across, and you're kind of dropped right in the middle of it without much context and you're like, what is going on right now? And I think I struggle with that a little bit. But in saying that, I think there is a topicalness that you touch on, Thomas, which is around the distrust of media and the government. And I feel like in that way, it was quite timely that this Spielberg film came out. And I don't think there are many people who can attract the budget that Spielberg does for a big budget action film. And I think that felt exciting, like all the action scenes and the car chases.
So many. I'd say more car chases than aliens for an alien
film. Agreed.
Well, I think it's more of a conspiracy thriller film. Not conspiracy, I want to say
government.
It is more of a conspiracy thriller than an alien film, for
government
sure.
Power.
Questioning. And it's interesting because obviously it has some big name cast, and I think by the way that Spielberg was attached to this film, it does attract that. People are just like, I'm just going to say yes, it's a Spielberg film.
Yeah, especially like lots of my friends went to see it at IMAX because, you know, you were expecting a spectacle.
Totally. And I think it's interesting, even Josh O'Connor, the choices that he's been making in terms of films, it feels like it's like you're going to make this choice because you're like, this could be the next big thing. It's Spielberg, the opportunity to work with such a prolific, well-regarded director, like, you know, the opportunity doesn't come up often. But I think I did struggle with trying to bring all the different, like, threads of the storyline together. I really, really struggled with it. But I think, you know, the performances in itself were quite strong. Like, I quite loved Emily Blunt and the way she would just start speaking another language. And I was like, did she actually learn those languages?
She did. Yeah. She, I mean, at least trained a little bit in learning both Russian and
Korean.
South Korean.
I think she's really good in this.
She's excellent. Yeah. And I... I love Emily Blunt. But I thought
how
she was
can
really
not?
Well. Yeah.
Is she one of those people who's impossible? I was thinking, does anyone dislike Emily Blunt? And if they do, what's their problem?
Precisely. I think she's so well cast in this. I also love Josh O'Connor, but I didn't feel as though he was given as much to work with. I didn't think he excelled in this role as much as her. She very much is the star, which is fine. I just was kind of excited to see them on screen together. This is a film. Look, I was excited to see this, but I just feel like it didn't quite match up. Now, the tagline for this film is, if you found out we weren't alone, if someone showed you, proved to you, would that frighten you? And I just feel like that concept sounds fascinating, and it just is never really properly explored throughout the film. And I found that a bit disappointing. It felt like fake advertising in lots of ways. I heard it. I heard this little. We won't go into too much of the plot because it is confusing. And I actually had that experience that you were talking before, Vaish, about how it's hard to follow and you're watching all these different films. I don't know how far in, two thirds of the way through, and Hugo was mentioned. And I'm like, who's Hugo? Hugo's a main character played by Colman Domingo. So it's just like he's crucial to this. I should, as a viewer who is going to write a review and talk about this film, know who this character is. And I just couldn't remember because there's so many things that aren't just well developed, and I'm all for throwing us in the action. I think that first 5-10 minutes of the film, really thrilling, loved the start, loved where we were taken. But there just isn't that development. And Vaish, you touched upon how often in this sort of genre we do get a lot of detail around this means this, and there's always a scene where things get explained to you. And it's not as though we need our handheld. But I do feel as though there was lots of things that seemed interesting, but it was so unclear. Like, I heard a reviewer refer to it as the glowy alien vape, and I'm going to go with that because I think that's as close to a technical term as we've got. But that thing that they're holding, seems to have all these different functions, and apparently it can do way more because another character mentions that. But it's never elaborated on. It seems to have an almost like, you know, the One Ring from Lord of the Rings? It seems to have that sort of power where people just disappear for a section. So you're like, okay, so it makes you invisible, and then you seem really tired after you've done that invisibility thing.
I liked the scenes with that device, but I mean, one defense is that classic thing about technology that's, you know, future technology will always look like magic to people who haven't caught up yet. So there's that idea. But look, in a story sense, that device works as a magic wand. It can kind of do whatever you want it to at every convenient point. And that is frustrating from a storytelling point of view.
Yeah.
It's to bring it back to Doctor Who, it's a bit like the criticism of the sonic screwdriver, this device that can seemingly do anything.
But doesn't do much.
Except for when it doesn't work for the story for it to do it.
Yeah. Also, and let's talk about Colin Firth for a moment. He is this kind of villainous character at the centre. Really interesting initially, but I feel like he really fades quite quick by the final act. And he sometimes chooses to use this and then sometimes doesn't. And sorry, I've got a long list of grievances, but I found, I've forgotten her name, Evie Westman, who plays...
Evie Hewson.
Evie Hewson, sorry.
Jane Blankenship.
Yeah, who is the Josh O'Connor's character's girlfriend in it. And the only characterisation she's given is that she's religious. And I just felt like, who is she? She kind of comes up and... There just wasn't enough depth to her either, and I just found that a bit frustrating.
This is part of my theory that I think this was meant to be a 4-hour film or maybe a mini-series, and they jettisoned a lot of stuff to get it contained. I don't know if that's true or not, but I heard people originally saying this is our Spielberg's Catholic film, and I mean, admittedly, they're people who tend to have terrible opinions, so I no wonder I disagreed. But I think that was going to be in there because there's some really interesting discussion of how do you reconcile faith with the existence of aliens? And it doesn't go anywhere. We have Colman Domingo, he's sort of set up as this kind of strange mentor figure with perhaps secrets of his own. Doesn't go anywhere. We have this interesting nun character who's like a mentor at the start of the film who doesn't go anywhere. Mm. The Josh O'Connor Eve stuff was terrific. I really enjoyed their dynamic as someone who had just started dating and then been poured into this conspiracy. But when they sort of get separated and that Eve character goes nowhere,
yeah,
it loses its tension. It's a real shame. And I've got to say, I absolutely, Colin Firth in villain mode, I was kind of excited by that.
Yes.
I thought he rocked. I loved the beard. There was a real aggression and cynicism aspect to him. Considering his reputation as kind of lovable, bumbling, you know, he often plays grieving characters, he often plays comedic characters and romantic leads. To see him in this mode, I got a bit of a charge out of it.
I'm a big, big fan of Colin Firth from Pride and Prejudice days.
Well, what we all are. I don't think we've seen him like this before.
No, we haven't.
And
you're
it
exactly
worked.
Right. Yeah, he...
But
excellent.
That character gets neutered at the end as well. It's a very sudden kind of, and the end. The film that I think this closely resembles is Close Encounters of the Third Kind. These are both films about people who have discovered something the government's covering up, and most of the film is spent with the discovery and the chase. The big difference is Close Encounters of the Third Kind ends with this glorious, 30 or 4 minutes of pure feel-good spectacle. The payoff is overwhelming. The music, the aliens, the idea that all these humans who have been in tension throughout the film come together just to witness this glorious moment. In Discovery Day, the film ends right before that moment happened. Disclosure Day, sorry. Discovery Day is a uni thing, isn't it? Disclosure Day, the film almost ends at the point you think it's going to start.
Yes.
And you don't get that emotional spectacle payoff, which you sort of feel you're going to get.
Well, you also, because one of the crucial I think the film is about empathy. It is ultimately about empathy and the importance of it, and yet there is almost no space for empathy or no depth to these characters in order for us to, or complexity in order for us to properly feel and have that demonstrated. And I just thought it's such a strange thing to have all these car chases and, you know, that idea of it all being so jumbled really took away from... No one seems surprised that there's aliens. You know, Spielberg, he's a legendary filmmaker enough to have his own reaction shot named after him, you know, like Spielberg face. And it's just like that's part of why we love his films. You know, you have this moment of shock or awe or fear that comes across in this close-up angle. And it's what he's known for. And there's nothing, you know, like we're at this stage where I think lots of people are seeking that kind of nostalgia cinema. I would have happily seen that. And there's elements of it, but we don't feel it.
The premise of the film is based on the idea that the world would stand still once this gets revealed. So it also assumes that once it gets revealed, that is going to grab everyone's attention. We'll all be watching some kind of media at the time and we'll stop.
Because we're all still watching, you know, television news.
What is interesting about the tone of this film is a lot of Spielberg films are about mistrust of authority and the heroes are trying to expose a secret the extreme is, of course, all the Nazi villains in the Indiana Jones films. What's interesting in the earlier Alien films, like E.T. and Close Encounters, is the government is trying to suppress the knowledge of aliens, but they're portrayed as kind of being well-intentioned. It's benevolent. They are trying to do the right thing and they're not threatening figures. I mean, they are to the children, but by the end of the film you realise that they're well-meaning. In Close Encounters.
So I just have to giggle like, oh, yeah, the stuff they do to the kids.
I'm thinking E.T., how the adults are often portrayed as being quite big, imposing figures. But there's that one character in E.T. who really realises the importance of this to Elliot and that Elliot is a good kid and this is meaningful and he needs to let it happen. And same with Close Encounters, when they let the civilians onto the military base at the end to welcome the aliens together. This film also has that idea, except this time it's a evil corporation who are trying to suppress the information, and they're not benevolent, they're not well-meaning, they're ruthless.
But also incompetent. Like, there's so many failed attempts. I think I'll get into spoiler territory now. I want to avoid that because I actually do think people should see this because you have to.
I still love this film. Despite all the issues I have with it, the car chase stuff is so cool. It looks so good. And the sequence on the train looks so good.
I just feel like it's too illogical and there's too many plot holes. But I think most of all, for an alien film, I was just really, and I don't think this is a spoiler, you know there's aliens in it, I was a bit disappointed in the characterization of this alien as kind of human-esque and kind of looked like something that could have been made in the 70s. And I almost wish this film, honestly, had been set in the 70s. I think it would have been a stronger film had it changed that, because the sensibilities around media, around how we respond to genocide, about how we respond to suffering on a mass scale, just feels so out of date.
And I know.
It just feels like not the film to be making and releasing in 2026. Faisha, I don't know. This is a very recent watch for you. Where are you sitting with Disclosure Day?
I think I feel like in terms of sci-fi, I am a bit more of a James Cameron fan than a Spielberg fan. And I think it's because James Cameron has this futuristic approach to how he takes on the sci-fi genre. So you feel like you're watching something that could happen in the future. Whereas I think you really hit the point there, Flick, where I feel like this seemed to be somewhat dated a bit in the way that it, even just like the depictions of broadcast media and people watching that, it just felt a little bit behind where I would have wanted this story to go. I would have loved like a future projection or an imagined kind of situation of how we might take the current context and reimagine it for the future. I think there is almost something that could have been forebating a little bit that could have been done with the film. And in some ways, I guess because I also really loved The Fabelmans, and I felt like if he was going to end his career, that felt like a really beautiful one because it was like a retelling of his personal story. And I think with this, it just kind of felt like, it, not that it tarnished the legacy, but I think I just wanted more from such a prolific director.
I would not be surprised to learn later down the track that there was studio interference possibly and edits were made against their will, because it does feel like a lot of good stuff got chopped out.
It made me think also there might be a sequel.
Potentially.
Well, maybe.
Wait, anyway, sorry, we're getting so into spoiler territory.
The other thing, I haven't heard many people... So, I mean, I've heard criticism of the way the animals at the end of the film looked, which...
Oh, the CGI.
You could argue there was a deliberate reason to make them look not quite right, and, you know, there's a reason for that. But I found the look and the appearance of the aliens really underwhelming. I was fighting it, and at some point in my head I just said, oh, they look a bit rubbish.
Yeah.
And I was really sad.
It's such a shame, isn't
because,
it?
Because, again, those early puppetry effects in Close Encounters and E.T. are just... glorious.
Also, the genre has changed so much. We think about Arrival, and there's elements, especially in the soundscape, that echo to Arrival and how we think about life outside of ourselves. Well, and I just thought
that's a really interesting film to compare it to, because I think Arrival is a hard science film. I think they take the science fiction really seriously and embed it with an incredible emotional drive. I mean, that's one of the great sci-fi films of recent memory.
Yeah.
Where I think Spielberg possibly doesn't really do hard science fiction. I think he does whimsical science fantasy.
Or emotion and philosophy, both of which I felt were a bit missing in Disclosure Day. But
the social commentary in Arrival is so much more sophisticated than it is here. That is true, yeah.
Maybe still see it. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't love every Spielberg film by any means. Although I enjoyed The Fablemans. I thought West Side Story was an absolute masterpiece. I kind of can't believe that didn't have a bigger impact. Anyway, I'm getting sidetracked. I enjoyed being back in that zone, as highly flawed as it is. I would probably still really happily rewatch this film.
Well, Disclosure Day is currently screening at major cinemas. You're listening to Primal Screen on Triple R.
Triple
Lust, desire. It has to go now. Look at the light.
Hi, my name is Vaishnavi Widyakuma, and you're listening to Primal Screen on Triple R. We have the pleasure of speaking to award-winning Melbourne filmmaker Adrian Chiarella, the writer and director of horror feature Leviticus. Leviticus is a bold and haunting queer horror that follows two teenage boys, Name and Ryan, whose love turns deadly after a brutal conversion therapy ritual. Leviticus is Adrian's debut feature, premiering at Sundance earlier this year to rave reviews and continuing its festival run at South by Southwest. Produced by Causeway Films, it was acquired by Neon for international distribution. Alongside Leviticus, Adrian has made three hugely successful short films and has also worked in television, writing an episode of SBS's anthology series Erotic Stories, which won him an Australian Writers Guild Award. Welcome to Primal Screen, Adrian.
Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on Leviticus. How did you come up with the concept for such a captivating story?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. It's an idea that I've been sitting with for a little while. I think I'd noticed in the last few years something had shifted in a lot of the progress that had been made for those of us in the LGBTQIA plus community. I think something seemed to be going backwards. I think it might have been as a result of a lot of that debate that was going on in the lead up to the marriage equality, conversations. I think even though we had won that one, I think what had happened in the aftermath is that the floodgates had been opened for a lot of very horrible, toxic rhetoric. And so I wanted to make a film that kind of addressed this odd return of homophobia into our society, but I didn't want to make the kind of film that could have been made 30 years ago that I'd been seeing for years. I wanted to make something that felt personal. So I started turning to the kinds of films that I watched when I was going through the kinds of experiences that the characters in my movie were going through when I was a teenager. That was the horror genre, which I think has a very special place, not only for me, but a lot of other young queer people. I think we see the stories of otherness and identity that are sort of used, that are encapsulated in the metaphor of horror. And I dug into what horror is about, and it's about fear. And I thought, what if I made a horror movie where the fear we're exploring is homophobia? And then I started thinking about what that sort of institutionalized homophobia looks like. And I had read about communities all around the world that performed exorcisms on queer teenagers. And at first I thought, maybe I'll make a horror movie like The Exorcist, only it's going to have this queer spin on it. But everything I came up with in that realm seemed to just perpetuate this myth that there's, like, you know, a gay demon inside of people. And I didn't really want to do that. So I started thinking about, well, what if there was some sort of ritual where they scared people out of their feelings? And that's where this idea of an entity or a horror movie monster that took the form of the person you most desire came from. And once I had that, I was able to focus on the other part of the story that I was interested in, which was the love story between the main two characters.
In a film landscape where it's challenging to get original IP off the ground, what was your approach to getting the industry behind this story?
I think we're quite lucky in Australia because we have these state and federal funding bodies that really support young filmmakers. And I was quite lucky to be accepted into one of those programs. Vic Screen ran Originate, which was something that they did throughout the COVID years where they were supporting original ideas. And I was in a group of what started as about 20 emerging filmmakers with feature concepts, and we were each given like a little bit of support to start writing. So with that support, I was able to spend a bit of time really honing the script so that by the time after, you know, a couple of years of doing that and, you know, weaving that between some TV work that I was doing at the same time, I had a reasonably developed script, which the producers at Causeway had seen. And they felt that the idea really had legs. A few more rounds of drafts of the script with them, we were able to get the film financed, and then it was kind of off and ready to go into production.
Yeah, wow. And religion plays a significant role in setting up the storyline, as implied by the title of the film. How did the historical relationship between religion and queer communities factor into the development of the primary antagonist?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't have religious parents, but I did go to religious school, and I had this experience where I was not only experiencing homophobia from other kids, but there were the occasional comments made by people in the school, like particularly some of the chaplains and religious members of the school, not overtly homophobic, but with reference to the Bible that's the title of our film, Leviticus. And it's really quite difficult when you're a young person and you're facing homophobia coming at you from both sides like that. So I think that was something that inspired the entity in this film. The idea of summoning up a force that could scare you out of your feelings and your desires and your identity.
I have to confess, I am an absolute chicken when it comes to body horror, and I was quite relieved that the focus was on harnessing tension rather than relying on visual gore. What was your thinking behind that approach?
Yeah, you know, I wanted the fear that's at the heart of this horror movie to be something real and something that audience members, no matter how they identify, could really experience. And not just experience it for a cheap thrill, but I wanted them to actually think about what it is, what the trauma and anxiety that these characters are going through. And I wanted them to feel it quite viscerally. And I knew if we just made it about jump scares, even though we do have a few of those in the film, if we just made it all about jump scares or just made it about, you know, little horror tricks, then I don't think the point of our film would have been made.
If you've just tuned into Primal Screen now, we're speaking to Melbourne filmmaker Adrian Chiarella about his debut feature, Leviticus. Leviticus was filmed in regional Victoria in Geelong. The location is key to the tone and aesthetic of the film. There's this beautiful shot of Joe Bird fleeing on his bike with this industrial backdrop, which, like, it just really stayed with me. Could you talk to me about how you leveraged the landscape for this story?
I mean, there's so much to unpack with that. I mean, first of all, I really wanted to lean into not just the horror genre, but the particular subgenre we were in, which is Australian horror. I think it's become a very recognisable form all around the world. You know, people get a bit of a jump scare and then they hear an Australian accent and they kind of know exactly what type of film they're in when you're in that. But I don't think anyone's ever really done a queer love story in that form before. So I was really excited by that and we didn't shy away from it. And I think that tradition is born out of, you know, we naturally are in quite a terrifying and intimidating landscape. And I think filmmakers over the past many decades have drawn on that when they've made horror movies. But on top of that, you know, the cinematographer Tyson Perkins and the production designer Beth Ryan and I, we all talked about this particular motif we were going for where you saw big elements of nature as well as these human-made structures, these sort of fading factories and, you know, roads and service stations, things like that. We wanted to create this clash of humanity and the universe because we wanted to explore a story where the audience questioned if people are living by these ancient edicts passed down through these old books and texts, how much of that is actually part of the universe and how much of that is just things that we impose on each other. That was the thinking anyway, but then it also sort of became just a you know, an interesting aesthetic that we applied to almost every shot.
You kind of touched on it before about how Australian horror is getting this global resonance. What is it about the genre and the Australian landscape that kind of has that pull for international audiences to really engage with?
Yeah, it's funny. I think whenever you talk to people overseas, they always talk about how scary they always talk about spiders and snakes and things that are so scared. So I guess it's naturally scary. But what I think is interesting and very universal about what Australian filmmakers tend to do when they make horror is they represent externally what that landscape is and it all looks very beautiful, but they also find a way to internalize that landscape and use it to represent an inner psychology that the characters are experiencing. And so it becomes representative of the fear and the trauma going on within the characters.
There are some big name Australian talent in the cast, including Ewan Leslie, Zara Newman, and Mia Wasikowska. But in the end, you were really captivated by the two leads, Joe Bird and Stacey Clausen. What was your approach to drawing out their chemistry and performance?
Yeah, it's true. We did have some big name cast, and they're not only big names, they're also very, very nice. I feel like we got the nicest actors in Australia to play these horrible parents. But with Stacey and Joe, I mean, we were all so captivated by them both as individual actors when they auditioned. But when we got them together to perform scenes at the callback auditions, at the chemistry tests, it was very clear to us that they had a very natural connection and a very authentic chemistry. that we were already at a really interesting starting place. But in the lead up to the shoot, I did a lot of rehearsal with them where I took them out to the locations where we shot and I got them to wander around in different spaces and character. I dropped them off in different areas and told them to find each other and find gifts for each other. I sent them out to like a crowded shopping mall and got them to stay in character together and just experience what it was like to be around each other in public in that way. So by the time we were shooting, they were just very comfortable. It's like they sort of felt the connection almost instinctively, so that they didn't have to overthink what that was. They were able to just be available to each other. And I think if you have really solid actors who are quite smart, like Joe and Stacey are, who are willing to be open and available for each other's performance and listen to each other and respond to each other, I think then the chemistry on screen kind of just emerges.
And you've touched on this before, but I really felt like Leviticus is about fear, but it's also so much about desire, which you have explored in your other work as well. What do you think links these two emotions, and how do you balance the two in the storytelling and directing?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've always been drawn to stories and films and books that kind of have this delicate balance where there's like a spark of attraction between characters, but there's something in the way. There's some sort of tension there. It might be their own fear, internally, or it might be something imposed on them, some sort of society that's not letting these two characters be together. I don't know what it is, but it's just that, to me, it's the heart of a really great story, and I hope it's something I can keep exploring no matter what genre I work in next.
Thank you so much for this insightful chat, Adrian, and congratulations on the film. I'm Vaishnavi Widyakumar, and you are listening to Primal Screen on Triple R.
Triple R on FM, digital, online and via the app.
Thanks so much for being here. It means a lot.
You're listening to Primal Screen on Triple R with Thomas Caldwell, Vaishmi Vijayakumar, and myself, Flick Ford. And just prior, you heard Vaish's interview with Aussie writer and director Adrian Chiarella about his debut feature, the queer horror Leviticus. And the track that you heard at the very top of the bracket was Self Control by Frank Ocean, which rather masterfully plays out at the during the opening, closing credits. And I think it's such a clever needle drop. I felt very raw in that moment. So in Leviticus, it does tell the story of two young men, Naim and Ryan, played by Joe Bird and Stacey Clawson, who are subjected to a conversion therapy style ritual in their local church by a terrifying deliverance preacher who's played by Nicholas Hope. And they soon become tormented by a violent supernatural entity that takes the form of the person they desire the most. The film also stars Mia Wasikowska as Naim's reserved mother, Arlene, and Ewan Leslie as church leader, Rod. Vaish, firstly, congratulations on that interview. It's such an interesting exploration of the context in which the film was made, and also the specificity running through it around queerness, growing up in this kind of religious community, and also being shot in Geelong, which is really interesting. I couldn't place it. I wasn't sure where it was. I feel like it has a lot of resonance. It's played extremely well to US audiences. So it has this kind of wonderful liminality to it. We'll play a quick clip, but I'm really keen to hear your thoughts on Leviticus. Here is a little taste.
Ryan, you okay? You see anything that looks like me? Don't go near it. It comes when no one else is around.
Vaish, I know you and I are both a bit sort of scaredy cats when it comes to horror, but what did you make of Leviticus?
I really enjoyed it. I think I really also enjoyed the Australian context and that kind of suburban setting and that horrors lurk in the crevices and corners of where you live on your street. I thought the leads were so captivating and incredible, and the way they conveyed the subtlety of emotion through their facial expressions, like the close-ups of their faces, was so compelling. And I just love the aesthetics of the film, the industrial landscape. And the film is doing really well internationally. It did so well at Sundance. Mm. It's the top reviewed horror film on Rotten Tomatoes at the moment. And I think there is this certain level of pride that comes with Australian filmmakers doing so well. And I think we do so well in this genre of horror. And it has such global appeal. And I think I just really enjoy this film. And I think with horror, it's always a tricky balance between managing the violence with the story. Mm. And I think because this was so deeply rooted in a societal issue, it made it feel so relatable and connected, and it really connected to the characters as well. I really, really loved it, and I loved the jump scares because you weren't expecting them. They take you on this journey of almost like this innocent street or a family gathering, and then it just suddenly out of nowhere something kind of pops up that you don't expect. I thought the way that Chiarella builds tension was just so clever. It like lured you in and then it just kind of scared you right out of it. Like, I just loved it.
There's also, I mean, you mentioned tension in a horror sense. There's also a lot of sexual tension within this film, and a scene where I very much was expecting something to happen, and I don't want to give away any spoilers. I feel like it's such an experience watching this film. The violence, so interestingly, is very much coming from a lot of the homophobia from school, you know, school friends, school kids, but also the community, and more specifically, this particular church group that Name goes to with his mum. I found that such a powerful context in which we're exploring this kind of idea of a supernatural entity. Thomas, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I like this. I really liked it at the first. I liked my favourite stuff was at the very start, where this relationship was beginning, and there was this kind of framing of these two boys who didn't seem like they'll be obvious friends or even lovers. And it all happens. And I think for the film to resonate more with me, I would have liked to have seen more of the romance. I would have liked to have felt more tragedy at what happens to them. I wanted some, because it was great. Their chemistry was wonderful. Both those actors were wonderful. But when we got into the horror element, it was a little bit on repeat for me. With moments that I thought were incredible. Look, it was so good seeing Nicholas Hope again. He should have become an international star.
He's so scary.
Ever since Bad Boy Bubby. I mean, everyone thought he was going to blow up me huge, and it sort of didn't quite happen. So I'm always happy to see him. Mia Wasikowska has a scene towards the end of the film that gives you a bit of back information about motivation and what's happening. That's absolutely chilling. It's just a dialogue scene, but when you realise what she's communicating, it's quite horrifying. I really liked in that interview division when the director was talking about this resurgence of homophobia, because there was a point where I was watching this thinking, haven't we moved on from all of this? Like, why are you watching another story about boys being bullied and homophobia? And I thought, because I'm being a privileged dickhead inner city guy, because we have gone backwards. We have gone backwards, and it's on the rise again.
It's backlash culture. It's backlash. As soon as we make progress, there is this tide of homophobia, whatever form this takes, but it could be against any sort of marginalised community. We have backlash.
And what was great about the queer element of this film is they framed the horror as also being somewhat self-loathing, and that self-loathing becomes weaponised by the church. And I've read a review I've read the kind of feedback from one queer person I know, and I spoke to another one in person, and both these guys, who are not by no means, you know, a representative sample of all audiences, but they both said this was amazing for them, and they said this reflected their feelings and thoughts and experiences when they were teenagers.
Well, I found the thread of around shame so gripping. Like, there's a scene. In lots of the scenes, actually, with Mia Wasikowska as Arlene, you know, Name's mother, and Joe Bird as Name, I just found them so fascinating. There's so much distance, like actual physical distance, the way that they're set up in the scene, the way in which they're framed. I mean, I know that Chiarella comes from an editing background, so I think that he's bringing that lens very much into how the story is going to tell so much visually. I was absolutely captivated by the romance, actually. I thought Joe Bird and Stacey Clausen were perfectly cast. They're both, I think they're around 19 to 21 years old, but they look like they could be 14. And I think that boyishness was so disarming, and especially, you know, both of these characters, I didn't feel an internalized homophobia. They're told from the outside world that what they're doing is wrong and shameful.
Yeah, no, I should qualify that. Yeah, I wasn't saying it was internalized.
No, I know, but it's interesting to see a celebration in those moments. And I thought they were quite, you know, it was quite sexy. It was believable for, you know, this young romance. I was so swept up in that kind of crush element. It's very much romantic horror.
Yeah.
I wanted more of
that. But I did like the way the shame was forced upon them, and then it became physicalized in a very violent way. I also really like the performative masculinity in a lot of the film, where even the kind of the way they express themselves as desiring each other was still kind of a little bit quite physical, or sort of play fighting often led to something more tender. There was lots of throwing things at each other, this sort of reluctance to be tender overtly. It had to be sort of a playful wrestling become something more, and there's something kind of very perceptive about that.
There is a lot of sadness in this, and I think a lot of moments of beauty. I was really struck by this. I think maybe if I was to pull at the threads a little, maybe I would have liked for some of those supporting characters to be developed a bit more, because I think, you know, this isn't happening in a vacuum, and I think the fact that it's a small community, they would notice a lot of these things happening. There would have been some sort of a reaction and an unpacking a little bit. And I don't need the specifics, but I think that detail could have anchored the story much more firmly in it. And sort of the...
It was almost too sparse. I think that's what stopped me from really loving it, but I admire the hell out of it.
And I have to say, you know, we've watched two very different films in preparation of tonight's show. We have this screen legend who's very much at the end of his career, and then we have this young writer-director, local filmmaker, who is making his feature debut. And I have to say, I had way more of an emotional resonance with this film. I think it's going to stay with me for a long time. I loved how it looked. I'm sorry, Thomas.
No,
not a fan of Disclosure Day.
You way cooler than me.
but I very much loved Leviticus. I have reservations, but I think on the whole, I'm very much swept up in it, and I'm glad that it's getting a lot of buzz as well.
I agree. I kind of can't wait to see what Adrian does next, the genre. And it does remind me a bit of Bones and All, where they look at, like, you know, that kind of idea of horror and desire and those two things going hand in hand. I really felt like that balance was really struck in this film.
Can I say something funny I noticed is looking at some of the American responses, they're all assuming this is set in rural Australia. And it's like, no, that's just Geelong.
I kind of do love that kind of external rhetoric, like how international audiences perceive Victoria and Australia and how this film kind of matches up to that perception.
Yes, absolutely.
But there is definitely a wave at the moment of, because, you know, it used to be Australian films are all about, they were set in the past and set in the outback. And then the big shift in the 80s and the 90s where we had all these films about the suburbs. And, you know, the fact that there were very diverse people living in the suburbs, and that was a great thing. We now kind of, I think, from Snowtown onwards, we're in this kind of industrial, outer suburban, decaying kind of places on the fringe feel. And it's in a lot of horror. And
it lends itself very well to this story, though, because it is about isolation.
And conservatism.
I think,
but it's kind of there is a real look to this film that I think we're seeing a lot of, and it's Snowtown onwards have kind of talk to me and the other film those two brothers made kind of have a similar look. I don't know, I might be a little over it, but I am noticing it everywhere.
I can't get enough of it. More, please. Leviticus is currently screening in major and independent cinemas. You're listening to Primal Screen on Triple R.
Triple R.
You've been listening to Primal Screen on Triple R with Thomas Caldwell, Vaishnavi Vijayakumar, and myself, Flick Ford, on tonight's show, we listened back. We started the hour with Steven Spielberg's Disclosure Day. And we also heard Vaisha's conversation with writer-director Adrian Chiarella about his debut feature Leviticus, and we finished up the hour by sharing our thoughts on the film. As always, you can listen back to the show on the Triple R website or app, or subscribe to the Primal Screen podcast and never miss an ep. And a big thank you to Jack Rowland for managing our socials and editing the podcast each week. Vaish, Thomas, pleasure chatting film with you both.
As always, thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us.
It's good night from us.
Thanks for listening to Primal Screen, a weekly radio show airing Monday evenings on Triple R. Hope you've enjoyed the podcast version, and feel free to get in touch via the Primal Screen Facebook page or the Triple R website.